Chapter 11, Part 2. Finn's dog was called Rob, but no one used his name much. He was somehow all dogs rolled into one with his trust and intelligence and faithfulness. And though he could hunt for his own food and steady the canoe by putting his weight in the right place, he understood that when humans were upset, one had to sit there while they pulled one's ear or buried their faces into one's back or even cried. The dog who will allow himself to be cried over is worth his weight in gold. He had been Bernard Taverner's dog and now was Finn's, and the other people did not interest him very much. But he was always very polite to Maya, and as she rubbed his back and said, "I don't know how I'm going to get the twins to do what I want," he caught the worry in her voice and did not move away, though he had heard some interesting noises in the bushes behind the hut. "It's quite easy," said Clovis, and Maya looked up, surprised, for Clovis was not usually a boy who found things easy. "It's just acting." "Yes, but I can't act." "Anyone can act," said Clovis. "There's just a few tricks, techniques they call it, but they're just tricks, really." They had just finished afternoon tea in the hut, which was Clovis's favourite meal, but when it was cleared, he said, "Look, watch me." He went to the window of the hut and looked out, seeming to be interested in what he saw. Then he came back and sat down. After a while, he got up and did the same thing. The third time, Maya got up and followed him to the window. "You see," said Clovis, "if you go to the window twice, the third time people will always follow you. It's the same when you're pretending to give someone the slip, but really you want them to come after you. Don't pause and look around furtively. Just keep changing your pace. Sometimes dawdle, sometimes run." So while Finn checked the list of things that Clovis would need for his night in the museum, Clovis coached Maya in how to act the part of someone with a guilty secret. "Because they mustn't think I want to betray Finn," she said. "They know I wouldn't do that. They must think I've done it by mistake." Just before Furrow came to fetch Maya, Finn took her aside and took something out of the pocket of his trousers. "Look," he said, and held out to her a beautiful silver pocket watch on a long chain. He clicked it open and showed her the initials BT engraved inside. "Your father's?" "Yes, he gave it to me my last birthday. It was the only thing he brought from Westwood. I feel I ought to give it to Clovis. It would make them absolutely certain he was me. But your father wanted you to have it." "Yes," said Finn, looking stricken. "But if it would help..." He shook his head. "Never mind. It's for me to decide." Then Furrow's canoe came through the reeds and Maya hugged Clovis and said goodbye. If everything went according to plan, Clovis would be on the boat the day after tomorrow, and it was hard leaving him. "But I expect you'll come to England, won't you?" Clovis said. He had given her the address of his foster mother. "I wish you were coming now," he said, and his eyes filled with tears. As Finn helped Maya into the boat, he leapt forward and whispered in her ear. "Don't worry about Clovis," he said. "I'll see he's all right. I won't let him get too scared, I promise." And Maya nodded and got into the canoe and was paddled away. "That settles it," said Mr. Trapwood. "We're going back to the pension. We're going to pack. We're going to be on the Bishop first thing tomorrow. Sir Aubrey will have to send someone else out. Nothing is worth another day in this hellhole." Mr. Lowe did not answer. He had caught a fever and was lying in the bottom of a large canoe owned by the Brothers of the Sour Gabriel Commission. The Sour Gabriel Mission had arranged for the crows to be taken back to Manhouse. His eyes were closed and he was wondering a little in his mind, mumbling about a boy with hair the colour of the belly of a golden toad, which squatted on the lily leaves of the Mamari River. There had, of course, been no golden-haired boys. There hadn't been any boys at all. What there had been was a leper colony, run by the Brothers of St. Patrick, a group of Irish missionaries whom the crowds had been sent. They're good men, the brothers, a man of the docks had told them as they set off on their last search for the taverner's son. They'll take in all sorts of strays, orphan boys with no homes. If anyone knows where the taverner's lad might be, it'll be them. Then he had spat cheerfully into the river because he was a crony of the chief of police and liked the idea of Mr. Lowe and Mr. Trapwood spending time with the brothers, who were very holy men indeed, and slept on the hard ground and ate porridge from the manioc roots and got up four times in the night to pray. The brothers' mission was on a swampy part of the river, with very unhealthy, but the brothers only thought about God and helping their fellow men. They welcomed Mr. Trapwood and Mr. Lowe and said they could look over the leper colony to see if they could find anyone who might turn out to be the boy they were looking for. They're a jolly lot, the lepers, said Father Liam. People who've suffered don't have time to grumble. But the crows, turning green, thought there wouldn't be much point. Even if there was a boy there, the right age, Sir Aubrey probably wouldn't think that a boy who was a leper could manage Westwood. Later, a group of pilgrims arrived who had been walking on the foothills of the Andes and were on their way to a shrine on the Madeira River. And the brothers knelt and washed their feet. We know you'll be proud to share the sleeping hut with our friends here, they said to Mr. Lowe and Mr. Trapwood. And the crows spent the night on the floor with 12 snoring, grunting men and woke to find two large and hungry-looking vultures squatting in the doorway. By the time they returned to Manhouse, the crows were beaten men. They didn't care any longer about the taverner's son or Sir Aubrey or even the £100 bonus they had lost. All they cared about was getting onto the bishop and steaming away as fast as could be done.